Chapter 29, The Civil Rights Movement, 1954 to 1968. Why it matters. During the 1960s, African Americans made major strides. They began by challenging segregation in the South. With the Montgomery bus boycott, Martin Luther King Jr. achieved national and worldwide recognition. His peaceful resistance inspired many, especially students. After King's assassination, the civil rights movement became more assertive. Many people in the movement began to see economic opportunity as the key to equality. The impact today. Changes brought about by the civil rights movement are still with us. Civil rights legislation provides protection against discrimination for all citizens. Economic programs for inner-city residents by government and social service agencies continue. Section 1. The Movement Begins. An American Story. On December 1, 1955, Rosa Parks left her job as a seamstress in Montgomery, Alabama, and boarded a bus to go home. In 1955, buses in Montgomery reserved seats in the front for whites and seats in the rear for African Americans. Seats in the middle were open to African Americans, but only if there were few whites on the bus. Rosa Parks took a seat just behind the white section. Soon, all of the seats on the bus were filled. When the bus driver noticed a white man standing at the front of the bus, he told Parks and three other African Americans in her row to get up and let the white man sit down. Nobody moved. The driver cautioned, "Y'all better make it light on yourselves and let me have those seats." The other three African Americans rose, but Rosa Parks did not. The driver then called the Montgomery police, who took Parks into custody. News of the latest arrest soon reached E.D. Nixon, a former president of the local chapter of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or NAACP. Nixon wanted to challenge bus segregation in court, and he told Parks, "With your permission, we can break down segregation on the bus with your case." Parks told Nixon, "If you think it will mean something to Montgomery and do some good, I'll be happy to go along with it." Adapted from Parting the Waters, America in the King Years. The origins of the movement. When Rosa Parks agreed to challenge segregation in court, she did not know that her decision would launch the modern civil rights movement. Within days of her arrest, African Americans in Montgomery had organized a boycott of the bus system. Mass protests began across the nation. After decades of segregation and inequality, many African Americans had decided the time had come to demand equal rights. The struggle would not be easy. The Supreme Court had declared segregation to be constitutional in Plessy v. Ferguson in 1896. The ruling had established the separate but equal doctrine. Laws segregating African Americans were permitted as long as equal facilities were provided for them. After the Plessy decision, laws segregating African Americans and whites spread quickly. These laws, nicknamed Jim Crow laws, segregated buses and trains, schools, restaurants, swimming pools, parks, and other public facilities. Jim Crow laws were common throughout the South, but segregation existed in other states as well. Often it was left up to each local community to decide whether to pass segregation laws. Areas without laws requiring segregation often had de facto segregation, segregation by custom and tradition. Court challenges begin. The civil rights movement had been building for a long time. Since 1909, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or NAACP, had supported court cases intended to overturn segregation. Over the years, the NAACP achieved some victories. In 1935, for example, the Supreme Court ruled in Norris v. Alabama that Alabama's exclusion of African Americans from juries violated their right to equal protection under the law. In 1946, the court ruled in Morgan v. Virginia that segregation on interstate buses was unconstitutional. In 1950, it ruled in Sweet v. Painter that state law schools had to admit qualified African-American applicants, even if parallel black law schools existed. New political power. In addition to a string of court victories, African-Americans enjoyed increased political power. Before World War I, most African Americans lived in the South, where they were largely excluded from voting. During the Great Migration, many moved to northern cities, where they were allowed to vote. Increasingly, northern politicians sought their votes and listened to their concerns. During the 1930s, many African Americans benefited from FDR's New Deal programs. Thus, they began supporting the Democratic Party, giving it new strength in the North. This wing of the party was now able to counter Southern Democrats, who often supported segregation. The push for desegregation. During World War II, African American leaders began to use their new political power to demand more rights. Their efforts helped end discrimination in factories that held with government contracts and increased opportunities for African Americans in the military. In Chicago in 1942, James Farmer and George Hauser founded the Congress of Racial Equality, or CORE. CORE began using sit-ins, a form of protest first used by union workers in the 1930s. In 1943, CORE attempted to desegregate restaurants that refused to serve African Americans. Using the sit-in strategy, members of CORE went to segregated restaurants. If they were denied service, they sat down and refused to leave. The sit-ins were intended to shame restaurant managers into integrating their restaurants. Using these protests, CORE successfully integrated many restaurants, theaters, and other public facilities in Chicago, Detroit, Denver, and Syracuse. Reading check. Examining. How had the ruling in Plessy v. Ferguson contributed to segregation? The civil rights movement begins. When World War II ended, many African American soldiers returned home, optimistic that their country would appreciate their loyalty and sacrifice. In the 1950s, when change did not come as quickly as hoped, their determination to change prejudices in the United States led to protests and marches, and to the emergence of the civil rights movement. Brown v. Board of Education. After World War II, the NAACP continued to challenge segregation in the courts. From 1939 to 1961, the NAACP's chief counsel and director of its Legal Defense and Education Fund was the brilliant African-American attorney Thurgood Marshall. After World War II, Marshall focused his efforts on ending segregation in public schools. In 1954, the Supreme Court decided to combine several different cases and issue a general ruling on segregation in schools. One of the cases involved a young African-American girl named Linda Brown, who was denied admission to her neighborhood school in Topeka, Kansas, because of her race. She was told to attend an all-black school across town. With the help of the NAACP, her parents then sued the Topeka School Board. On May 17, 1954, the Supreme Court ruled unanimously in the case of Brown v. Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas, that segregation in public schools was unconstitutional and violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Chief Justice Earl Warren summed up the court's decision when he wrote, "In the field of public education, the doctrine of separate but equal has no place. Separate educational facilities are inherently unequal." The Southern Manifesto. The Brown decision marked a dramatic reversal on the ideas expressed in the Plessy v. Ferguson case. Brown v. Board of Education applied only to public schools, but the ruling threatened the entire system of segregation. Although it convinced many African Americans that the time had come to challenge other forms of segregation, it also angered many white Southerners, who became even more determined to defend segregation, regardless of what the Supreme Court ruled. Although some school districts in border states integrated their schools in compliance with the court's ruling, anger and opposition was a far more common reaction. In Washington, D.C., Senator Harry F. Byrd of Virginia called on Southerners to adopt massive resistance against the ruling. Across the South, hundreds of thousands of white Americans joined citizens' councils to pressure their local governments and school boards into defying the Supreme Court. Many states adopted pupil assignment laws. These laws created an elaborate set of requirements other than race that schools could use to prevent African Americans from attending white schools. The Supreme Court inadvertently encouraged white resistance when it followed up its decision in Brown v. Board a year later. The court ordered school districts to proceed with all deliberate speed to end school segregation. The wording was vague enough that many districts were able to keep their schools segregated for many more years. Massive resistance also appeared in the halls of Congress. In 1956, a group of 101 Southern members of Congress signed the Southern Manifesto, which denounced the Supreme Court's ruling as a clear abuse of judicial power and pledged to use all lawful means to reverse the decision. Although the Southern Manifesto had no legal standing, the statement encouraged white Southerners to defy the Supreme Court. The Montgomery Bus Boycott. In the midst of the uproar over the Brown v. Board of Education case, Rosa Parks made her decision to challenge segregation of public transportation. Outraged by Parks' arrest, Joanne Robinson, head of a local organization called the Women's Political Council, called on African Americans to boycott Montgomery's buses on the day Rosa Parks appeared in court. The boycott was a dramatic success. That afternoon, several African American leaders formed the Montgomery Improvement Association to run the boycott and to negotiate with city leaders for an end to segregation. They elected a 26-year-old pastor named Martin Luther King Jr. to lead them. On the evening of December 5, 1955, a meeting was held at the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, where Dr. King was pastor. In the deep, resonant tones and powerful phrases that characterized his speaking style, King encouraged the people to continue their protest. "There comes a time, my friends," he said, "when people get tired of being thrown into the abyss of humiliation, where they experience the bleakness of nagging despair." He explained, however, that the protest had to be peaceful. "Now let us say that we are not advocating violence. The only weapon we have in our hands this evening is the weapon of protest. If we were incarcerated behind the iron curtains of a communistic nation, we couldn't do this. If we were trapped in the dungeon of a totalitarian regime, we couldn't do this. But the great glory of American democracy is the right to protest for right." Quoted in Parting the Waters, America in the King Years. King had earned a Ph.D. in theology from Boston University. He believed that the only moral way to end segregation and racism was through nonviolent, passive resistance. He told his followers, "We must use the weapon of love. We must realize that so many people are taught to hate us that they are not totally responsible for their hate. African Americans," he urged, "must say to racists and segregationists, we will soon wear you down by our capacity to suffer. And in winning our freedom, we will so appeal to your heart and conscience that we will win you in the process." King drew upon the philosophy and techniques of Indian leader Mohandas Gandhi, who had used nonviolent resistance effectively against British rule in India. Like Gandhi, King encouraged his followers to disobey unjust laws. Believing in people's ability to transform themselves, King was certain that public opinion would eventually force the government to end segregation. Stirred by King's powerful words, African Americans in Montgomery continued their boycott for over a year. Instead of riding the bus, they organized carpools or walked to work. They refused to be intimidated, yet they avoided violence. Meanwhile, Rosa Parks' legal challenge to bus segregation worked its way through the courts. Finally, in December 1956, the Supreme Court affirmed the decision of a special three-judge panel, declaring Alabama's laws requiring segregation on buses to be unconstitutional. Reading check. Describing. What was the ruling in Brown v. Board of Education? African American churches. Martin Luther King Jr. was not the only prominent minister in the bus boycott. Many of the other leaders were African American ministers. The boycott could not have succeeded without the support of the African American churches in the city. As the civil rights movement gained momentum, African American churches continued to play a critical role. They served as forums for many of the protests and planning meetings, and they also mobilized many of the volunteers for specific civil rights campaigns. after the Montgomery bus boycott demonstrated that nonviolent protest could be successful, African American ministers led by King established the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, or SCLC, in 1957. The SCLC set out to eliminate segregation from American society and to encourage African Americans to register to vote. Dr. King served as the SCLC's first president. Under his leadership, the organization challenged segregation at the voting booths and in public transportation, housing, and public accommodations. Reading check. Summarizing. What role did African American churches play in the civil rights movement? Eisenhower and civil rights. President Eisenhower sympathized with the goals of the civil rights movement, and he personally disagreed with segregation. Following the precedent set by President Truman, he ordered Navy shipyards and veterans hospitals to be desegregated. At the same time, however, Eisenhower disagreed with those who wanted to roll back segregation through protests and court rulings. He believed that people had to allow segregation and racism to end gradually as values changed. With the nation in the midst of the Cold War, he worried that challenging white Southerners on segregation might divide the nation and lead to violence at a time when the country had to pull together. Publicly, he refused to endorse the Brown versus Board of Education decision. Privately, he remarked, "I don't believe you can change the hearts of men with laws or decisions." Despite his belief that the Brown versus Board of Education decision was wrong, Eisenhower felt he had to uphold the authority of the federal government, including its court system. As a result, he became the first president since Reconstruction to send federal troops into the South to protect the constitutional rights of African Americans. Crisis in Little Rock. In September 1957, the school board in Little Rock, Arkansas, won a court order to admit 9 African-American students to Central High, a school with 2,000 white students. Little Rock was a racially moderate southern city, as was most of the state of Arkansas. A number of Arkansas communities, as well as the state university, had already begun to desegregate their schools. The governor of Arkansas, Orville Faubus, was believed to be a moderate on racial issues, unlike many other Southern politicians. Faubus was determined to win re-election, however, so he began to campaign as a defender of white supremacy. He ordered troops from the Arkansas National Guard to prevent the 9 African-American students from entering the school. The next day, as the National Guard troops surrounded the school, an angry white mob joined the troops to protest the integration plan and to intimidate the African-American students trying to register. Television coverage of this episode placed Little Rock at the center of national attention. Faubus had used the armed forces of a state to oppose the authority of the federal government, the first such challenge to the Constitution since the Civil War. Eisenhower knew that he could not allow Faubus to defy the federal government. After a conference between Eisenhower and Faubus proved fruitless, the district court ordered the governor to remove the troops. Instead of ending the crisis, however, Faubus simply left the school to the mob. After the African-American students entered the school, angry whites beat at least 2 African-American reporters and broke many of the school's windows. The mob came so close to capturing the terrified African-American students that the police had to take them away to safety. The mob violence finally pushed President Eisenhower's patience to the breaking point. Federal authority had to be upheld. He immediately ordered the U.S. Army to send troops to Little Rock. By nightfall, 1,000 soldiers of the elite 101st Airborne Division had arrived. By 5 o'clock a.m., the troops had encircled the school, bayonets ready. A few hours later, the 9 African-American students arrived in an Army station wagon, and they walked into the high school. The law had been upheld, but the troops were forced to remain in Little Rock for the rest of the school year. New civil rights legislation. The same year that the Little Rock crisis began, Congress passed the first civil rights law since Reconstruction. The Civil Rights Act of 1957 was intended to protect the right of African Americans to vote. Eisenhower believed firmly in the right to vote, but he viewed it as his responsibility to protect voting rights. He also knew that if he sent a civil rights bill to Congress, conservative Southern Democrats would try to block the legislation. In 1956, he did send the bill to Congress, hoping not only to split the Democratic Party, but also to convince more African Americans to vote Republican. Several Southern senators did try to stop the Civil Rights Act of 1957, but the Senate Majority Leader, Democrat Lyndon Johnson, put together a compromise that enabled the act to pass. Although its final form was much weaker than originally intended, the act still brought the power of the federal government into the civil rights debate. The act created a civil rights division within the Department of Justice and gave it the authority to seek court injunctions against anyone interfering with the right to vote. It also created the United States Commission on Civil Rights to investigate allegations of denial of voting rights. After the bill passed, the SCLC announced a campaign to register 2 million new African American voters. Reading Check. Explaining. Why did President Eisenhower intervene in the civil rights controversy?